All right, no, lots of prayers, but I'm telling you, I can spend all service long praying. I'd have no problem doing that. But I do want the word to go forth this morning. And as I was preparing lots of things, I should show you my notes. Maybe I shouldn't, that'd be scary. But sometimes I word vomit. I just type down all these thoughts, all the things that are going through my head. And I look at them like, wow, that's a lot of random stuff. And sometimes I try to make that all one cohesive sermon. And that's my struggle. But this time the Lord said, just kind of after I just kind of almost like journaling, just putting down stuff, he kind of was kind of putting things away. And actually, one of the first things I wrote down, I felt like the Lord was breathing on. And that's what I was supposed to go after this morning. And so it ties in to the story of Joseph, and actually Genesis chapter 50, the very end. And you could turn there. But the title of this morning's message is, I Will Prophesy Your Promise. I was looking for a title that would be launching and all those things. I just felt like, no, this is it. After I prepared my sermon, I was looking for a title, and I felt like this is appropriate. I will prophesy your promise. And if you want, actually on purpose, I didn't put the whole passage up on slides up here for you to read along. I felt like this morning we can get our fingers dirty. So if you have a Bible, you can open it. If you don't have a Bible, there's a Bible in the pew in front of you. If there's not enough, I know everyone here has got, at least someone's got a smartphone with an app. You can open up the Bible in your app. And we're going to go to Genesis chapter 50. And we're going to look at verses 15 through 26. If it seems like a long time that we're reading, I timed it. It took me less than 2 minutes to read it, so it doesn't take that long. You should have a two-minute attention span to be able to read along. I get it. I'm reading from the New King James Version, so if you have the app, that's the Bible in front of you is New King James. I try to make it easy, but I actually prefer reading this story in the New Living Translation, so if you got that, then you're a leg up. So anyways, let me read to you this word. I'm going to take a message out of this, and I'll even share this now. I started to make notes, and actually in some of my points, the Lord said, don't even put down any notes. So I have some notes up here, but there's some things up here I already know. 90% of the time when I preach, I don't even get to all my notes anyway. They're just useless notes up here. And so I felt like the Lord saying, don't waste your time. Just just come up there with the word that God has. So let's read. Let's read Genesis chapter 50, starting in verse 15. It says this. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, perhaps Joseph will hate us and may actually repay us for all the evil which we did to him. So they sent messengers to Joseph, saying, before your father died, he commanded, saying, thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now please forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face. And they said, behold, we are your servants. Joseph said to them, do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring about as it is this day, to save many people alive. Now therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. So Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's household. And Joseph lived 110 years. Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. The children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were also brought up on Joseph's knees. And Joseph said to his brethren, I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land of which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. All right. So there's a lot that's going on there. I'm not even going to explain and give all the backstory of the story of Joseph. But this is, if you didn't catch it, this is the last few verses. This is the very end of the book of Genesis. And I just wanted to quickly even just compare that. Genesis 1:1, what was that, right? What's the very first words? In the beginning, God created. In the beginning, God created. There's all this hope and all these good things about that are happening. God is creating. And what's the very end of Genesis? And in the end, man dies. To me, Genesis ends, if you read it, it can end on a very somber note. God creates and man dies. And it can just be this kind of heavy, somber tone. And there's truth to that. Joseph, he was a patriarch, right? He's right, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And now Joseph, the 12 sons, right? The 12 tribes of Israel. this great patriarch has now passed away. And there's a heaviness to it. And there's even Joseph, even if you read these scholars, and you can do it, if you read between the lines, Joseph recognizes that oppression has already begun in Egypt. Even though Joseph was second in command from the first Pharaoh, there's probably a different Pharaoh by now when he's 100 years old dying, different Pharaoh, they've already lost their favor. There's some things going on where Joseph recognizes that, and he sees there's hard times coming. So there's just this somber heaviness at the end of the book of Genesis. What I love is, it's the title of this message. But if you see in those last few verses, Joseph prophesied. He prophesied. He said some things. And so that first point, the first verse I want to look at is verse 26. It's actually just verses 24 and 26. It says this, Joseph said this, "I'm dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land." So Joseph died, they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. So you got to remember, he said in those notes, I didn't put them all in there, but Joseph said, remember, brothers, remember, and tell your children, don't leave me here. They're going to put me in a coffin in Egypt, but when it's time, when the Lord visits you, take me out of this place into the promised land. He's prophesying, the day is going to come when the Lord's going to visit, and you're going to go into the promised land. And in that day, don't leave me here, don't leave me in Egypt, take me to the promised land, bury me there. So he was prophesying a promise. The Lord is going to visit you, and you're going to enter a promised land. You're going to leave this place. You're going to leave this place of bondage, of sorrow, of grief, of oppression. You're going to leave this place, and you're going to go to a promised land. And so I love that it's not just a somber note. There's prophecy happening in the last few verses of Genesis. Joseph, this patriarch, is gone, but he's promising a hope. There is hope. There is still yet hope. And I just felt like the Lord wanted to speak that over us as a church. The reality is, you can see some connections already, right? To me, Jan is a matriarch. She is a mother to me, to hundreds, if not thousands. She's a spiritual mom. And we lost her. And there's a somber tone to that. But I know that I know that I know that Jan has prophesied over you, over our church. That she's saying, oh, but the Lord is going to visit you. Oh, but you are going to visit a promised land. You don't even know yet. See, Joseph saw these things. He understood. He understood better than anybody the idea of holding on to hope. When everything seemed to go wrong, when everything, all circumstances would say you should give up hope, he knew what it is to hope above and beyond hope. Joseph lived this life, right? You know the story of Joseph. He was given a dream. He was given a promise as a young boy. And what did his brothers and his family do? They didn't believe him. His brothers actually hate him so much they tried to kill him. Then they sold him to be a slave. And then in slavery, he was lied and accused, falsely accused, thrown into jail. He's in jail. He helps some other people, gets them out of jail. And when it's time for them to help Joseph, they forget about him. All these bad things keep happening to Joseph, but he will not give up on hope. He will not stop prophesying the promise God gave him. God, you said. God, you said. All of my circumstances say the exact opposite, but God, you said, but God, right? Some of the most powerful words in the Bible, but God. Joseph understood what it was to prophesy God's promise in the face of everything being anti, against him. And when I say that, he didn't just have those words come out of his mouth. He lived it. He lived it. When he was sold into slavery, man, I'm going to be the best slave possible. I am going to bless my master more than any of this slave ever has. When he was thrown into jail, wrongly, falsely accused, man, I'm going to make my jailer's job the easiest job in the world. I'm going to clean up my jail cell the best, and I'm going to offer it to another jailer, and I'll go clean up their jail cell for them. I'm going to do whatever I can to keep prophesying the promise, not just with words, but in action and deed. I believe that God has promised that I'm supposed to be a place of leadership, so I'm going to act as though it were, wherever I am. I'm going to act this way. I'm going to do these things. I'm going to proclaim God's promise. I'm going to be filled with hope, no matter what. And like I said, I wrestled. I'm still wrestling up here. So many things to say, so many things of... Honestly, what is the pastor supposed to do when the matriarch of the church passes away? And all that, to me, oppression and heaviness. I don't know what to do. I don't have an experience. I don't know what to pull from. Oh, well, next Sunday, at least we got someone who's an expert. He'll come next Sunday. Great. But the Lord is saying, Ryan, don't worry about all those things. Man, I'm getting to where Jan is too. But what I loved about Jan, and really all I have to offer you, is simply kind of what Joseph had to live out. Just my own walk with God. I don't have all the answers. I don't have everything to give you, to comfort you, to help you, to heal, to restore, to give you hope. I don't have all of that. All I know is I have my relationship with Christ. And can I tell you, yes, I've wept. I will continue to weep at the loss of Jan. But there is this hope that is an anchor for my soul. I will not be crushed, defeated, discouraged, disillusioned in any way. I can feel it. I'm telling you, it's not like it doesn't come. I feel those same emotions. I have those times of sorrow, but I refuse not to just... I hope this. I'm communicating this well because we've been going through this for the last several months, at least my family has, losing people. I don't want to sweep things on the rug. I don't want to just say things, just pretend it doesn't happen, just say nice, good things. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying let's process things. Let's go through it, but let's not stop having hope. Let's not stop prophesying His promise. In the midst of this tragedy, in the midst of darkness, man, let's say, no, this is what God said. This is who God is. It's His character. It's His nature. It's who He is. You know, I was even thinking about that. There was, like, Joseph got that word early on. Early on when I became the pastor about 7 years ago, I remember I declared, you know, I feel like this church is supposed to be, and maybe it was kind of a slang term, a depression-free zone. I feel like this church, no matter who comes into this property and comes here, depression is supposed to go. And I tried to explain that a little bit, like, you know, I think I even quoted that verse this morning, that we can put on a garment of praise for a spirit of heaviness. There is a spiritual force of wickedness that wants to bring depression. So there's a difference between grieving. There is godly sorrow that leads to repentance. There is things that, man, we are supposed to grieve and mourn. You see throughout the New Testament, right? Jesus wept. All these things we're supposed to mourn. So I'm not trying to say those are bad, unhealthy things to do, but not with depression. Not with a heavy spirit, not where we lose hope, where we have a bright future to look towards. That can't be taken away from us. We can't allow depression or discouragement to rule and reign in this place. And so I'm saying, I believe the Lord is saying in the midst of these sorrows like sea billows that roll, that we are prophesying, it is well with my soul. It does not matter what the world brings, what the enemy brings against me. It is well with my soul. I will, and the things I'm saying, I really will. I will preach till I'm blue in the face, till the day I die, that God promises, and He will. He's good. You can bank, take it to the bank. He will work together all things for good for those who are called according to His purposes, right, and who love Him, right? These ideas that Romans 8 is one of my favorites, but it's one of these things where God, you can't let go of the truth and the promises of God. We've got to prophesy those things, and sake of time, let's just move on to the next verse. In verse 21, it says this. I'm trying to get to my 3 points that I have, and then we'll see what God has in those points. And this is one that I have no notes on at all, so you won't even see me look back there. I shouldn't even walk back. Genesis 50, verse 21. Do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. And He comforted them and spoke kindly to them. I know this is Joseph speaking, but to me, Joseph was a predecessor to Christ. And I believe these words are divine. They're from God. Like I said, I don't even have notes. I don't even know what I'm supposed to say, but I know when I read those words, God was speaking kindly to me. And no matter what I ramble or say up here this morning, I believe that there's got to be at least one person in this room that word is just a word for you. That maybe I'm not even supposed to preach over my mouth for the next 30 seconds. And you're supposed to just reread that as if the Lord is speaking to you. I think these words definitely refer to us losing Jan, but I think it goes beyond that. There's something the Lord is wanting to speak individually to people in this room, and I'm saying this to myself too. Don't be afraid. Don't let fear rule and reign in your hearts. Do not be afraid. As much as Jan is a spiritual mom, and I gained so much from her and I leaned on her, the Lord is promising that He will provide. He will provide. And I love that, not just for me, but for my little ones. And I mean that even for my own daughter, who's Jan is her goddaughter. But I mean that for us as a church, as the sheep, that it's my job to shepherd. And I look to Greg and Jan to be my shepherds. That I don't have to fear that God is going to provide for my little ones. I love that the Lord wants to comfort. He wants to speak kindly to us. It's in His nature. That's who He is. I guess even so, I'm thinking about that verse. It's because God is my provider. What I was given through Jan's life was God working and moving through Jan into my life. That what my brother-in-law Joseph was to his wife and kids, God is saying, I will provide. As I got to be home last night and got to break the rules and rock my own little niece, Naomi, to sleep. I'm not supposed to do that, but I did. I broke the rules. I went into the quiet room and I grabbed her. She was crying. And I got to just rock her for a little bit. And just prayed over her. And I just a comfort. I mean, I was crying, but it was just good to know that God is going to provide. Even without my brother-in-law, God is providing for the little ones. And that I can be a part of that. That I was just praying, God, help me to be. I know I will never be her dad, but God, help me to be, as I preached on last Sunday, at least a father type, a father figure, that God, You would provide through me to Naomi. And I guess that's what I love about this verse. I feel like God is prophesying that even though we lost Jan, God is raising up all of us to be like Jan, to be spiritual moms, for God to provide through us, not just through her. All right, next verse we want to get to. Verse 20. You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to save many people alive. If you read these verses in different translations in the context of verses before it, it says that Joseph had to convince his brothers. His brothers couldn't believe what Joseph was saying. He said, I'm telling you, it's okay. Even what the enemy meant for evil, God is using for good. He has used for good. I'm convincing, I'm trying to tell you, God is so big and He's so sovereign that no matter what goes on, no matter what the enemy does, He uses it. God uses it for good. It's the truth. He's prophesying. Joseph is prophesying. Look at what it's already done. We've already saved my father and all of you. You guys were dying. And because of what God did bringing me to Egypt, I saved your physical lives. You're not dead because of what God did. But He's saying, I promise you, this isn't just right now for saving. I love the New King James where it says, saving people alive. I'm like, saving people alive? Why is that alive in there? I just feel like it's, for me, I feel like God was telling me, it's this idea that it's not just to save your physical bodies, but to save your souls, your spirits. That God uses everything to bring life into your spirit. In the natural, losing Jan should crush us. But in the supernatural, in who God is, that He does these things that does not make sense. He's actually breathing life to make us alive. To make us alive, more alive. See, I'm convinced, as I shared already during worship, that he who started a good work in Jan, he's faithful to bring it to completion. Amen. And I prayed for years. I saw things that God wanted to do to me through Jan, like in ministry, in leadership. There's things I kept pushing Jan. Jan, I think you could step up more. Jan, I think you could say more. Jan, I think you could use your leadership to do more. I kept trying to push Jan to be up front and to do things. Because I think there's things that the Lord revealed to me that are supposed to happen in this church. And the things that God was doing in Jan wasn't for her to do in the physical, the natural. It was things that Jan was prophesying, that Jan was interceding and praying for our church that are still going to happen. It isn't going to take her physical presence here to make those things that God started in Jan. Things that Jan began. Good works that she began. Dreams that she had for us. That God is faithful to bring those to completion. And one of those things that, man, there's a zillion things, but I do want to end on this specifically, I guess. One of those things that I know Jan was plowing tough ground. Fallow ground, where Jan was sowing seed, where Jan was watering and fertilizing, where Jan was propping up and encouraging and making sure growth was happening. For me, one of them was valuing the presence of Jesus Christ. I love his word. She loves his word. She spent time in his word, but I love that you talk to Greg, man, it's all about the word. You talk to Jan, it's all about the presence of Jesus. And it's both. But I love that Jan, she was a lover of his presence. She could care less about religion, about what you're supposed to do. She had genuine, authentic, real relationship with Jesus. And she just wanted everyone else to have what she had. And the way she experienced it was in quiet time alone with Jesus. Yes, in corporate time too. But there was something that we all could agree on, the sweetness of Jan. It was the sweetness of God coming out of her. I think we all recognize that Jan is probably the most sweetest person we ever met. But you know what? I had second thoughts about even saying this. Like I said, she plowed tough ground. Where she had the most kickback was when she was up front behind this pulpit trying to teach. When she was leading in worship, trying to pursue the presence of God. There were people who walked out of this room on Jan. There were people that were offended with her just craving the presence of God. And I don't say that, I try not to say that in a harsh tone, but I just know that I know the good work that Jan started. It's not done. There's a sweetness of God's presence that she lived in, that she so longs for this church to grow and mature in. And I will continue to champion it. And I know that God is raising up my wife and other people in this room to champion that. To not be offended if you don't like the word soaking or meditating or whatever other word you want to describe it as. I don't care. It's just the sweetness of God's presence. That's what I long for. It's in our mission statement to encounter the presence of God. We will embrace His promises, but I'm telling you as a church, there's more. There's a greater depth. There's greater heights. Whatever way you want to describe it, there's more to God's presence. And I'm trying to end this service with some time. I want to end with a song. And I don't want to manufacture or manipulate or try to make something happen, but I've been praying that even as we just end in this song, that all of us, no matter where we're at, we learn to go a little deeper in the presence of God.